speaker is Alice White, I'm sorry. She's an epidemiologist and team lead for the Colorado Integrated Food Safety Center of Excellence, which is based at the Colorado School of Public Health.
Hey, hi everyone. So I'm going to talk about a project that we're working on looking at past outbreak surveillance data to see if we can build tools from that data to use potentially in future outbreaks. So I'll just give a bit of brief background about what the Integrated Food Safety Centers of Excellence, or COEs, are. So established in 2012, there are currently 6 centers, and each is associated with a region, and we are each a partnership between the state health department and an academic institution. So the overall goal of the COEs is to build capacity in local and state health departments by developing and providing online and in-person resources, training, and assistance for foodborne illness surveillance and investigation. So one of the things we've been thinking about with the COEs is unsolved outbreaks. So outbreak investigations help identify food safety interventions by identifying the pathogens in foods that cause illness, as well as the factors that contribute to contamination. And key to being able to do this is to identify a food vehicle in an outbreak investigation, which is really hard. It can be really difficult. There's a lot of factors that play into an investigation and whether or not it's successfully identifies a food. And more than 40% of outbreaks actually do not, reported outbreaks actually do not confirm a food vehicle. And so one of the really key steps that we see is being able to test a hypothesis. So, of course, in order to figure out what the food is, you need to be able to test what a hypothesis might be. And to be able to test that, you need to have developed a good hypothesis, which might seem kind of intuitive, but that can be tricky. So what does it take? What are some things that can help generate good hypotheses? So let's just take a look at an example. So this was a foodborne outbreak from a few years ago, STEC 0157. Just looking at the demographics here, so the median age was 24 and a slightly higher percentage female. So I know the foodborne folks in the room are probably already thinking in their heads, turning away at a couple of different food possibilities based on just the small amount of information. So let's say you're totally stuck, though. What are some of the resources you might use if you have an outbreak and you really just don't know what might be causing it? Oh, I was supposed to go one at a time. So the first thing or person I think of is Alicia Cronquist. So she is foodborne epi at the State Health Department in Colorado, and she probably killed me for putting her picture up here, so nobody tell her. But she's a wonderful, amazing resource. She has tons of experience, lots of knowledge, and so she's really my go-to for any questions. And also, if you already have exposure data, there's some other resources like the Food Net Population, the Atlas of Exposures. And that was done quite a few years ago, so it can be problematic. And also, you kind of need to already have a hypothesis in order to be using that. You might use some other online resources. Go to a PubMed search to see what's been associated with your pathogen in the past. The NORS group, the National Outbreak Reporting System group at CDC, has a food tool where you can query past outbreaks. Or you might just kind of follow your gut, especially if you have a lot of experience. Pun intended. So some of you might have had leafy greens or produce in your mind based off of that sparse demographic data earlier. And so the question that we had was, well, so we use a lot of this basic descriptive information to generate our hypotheses in foodborne outbreak investigations. And is that when we look at past outbreak data, is that actually the case? Are those demographics different by food sources? And if so, can we use some of that information to build a tool or to inform hypotheses in future investigations? So our purpose was to use existing outbreak data to develop methods and tools to make hypotheses about food vehicles. And we started by using STEC outbreaks. So we used the Electronic Foodborne Outbreak Reporting System, or E4s, which was NORS' predecessor, and then NORS data. So we had outbreak data from 1998 to 2014 for all of the U.S. And food categorization, it turns out, is very tricky. So we use something that the Interagency Food Safety Analytics Collaboration, or IFSAC, had previously come up with. And then the predictors, or the different factors that we looked at, included the percent female, the percent hospitalized, the percent age categories, whether or not it was a multi-state outbreak, the setting, so whether it was in a private home or if it was a non-private home, the season that the outbreak began, as well as the duration of the outbreak. So from 1998 to 2014, there were 470 STEC outbreaks in the U.S. We did exclude quite a few different outbreaks, so any of those that didn't determine a food source, any that had complex foods. So this is quite common where you might narrow it down a bit, but not down to the ingredient. Rare foods, which we defined as less than 6 outbreaks associated with that food, so papaya, for example, had 2 or 3 STEC outbreaks. And then we did exclude non-0157 outbreaks for this analysis, which left 119 beef, 25 dairy, and 39 leafy greens. So just taking a look at the univariate results first. So what we found when we're looking at the demographics, that percent female was indeed, when we looked at all the past outbreaks, the average percentage female was higher for leafy vegetable outbreaks and not for beef and dairy. And for age categories, so dairy was higher in the under 5, percentage under 5, as well as percentage 5 to 19 years. And leafy vegetable outbreaks had a higher percentage in the 20 to 49 age group. Leafy vegetable outbreaks also had a higher number, higher average number of cases in the outbreak, and were more common in non-private home settings, whereas beef and dairy were more common in the home. They were also more likely to be multi-state, and leafy vegetable outbreaks were more likely to happen in the fall season as opposed to beef, which are more likely in the summer season. So given that we did see quite a few statistically significant differences in all of these different factors, we wanted to take it a step further and look at how can we combine these different things we know and maybe look for patterns and potentially put them into a tool that could be useful. So the first method that we used to look at this, we did a regression analysis using all of these different predictive factors, which we did publish. But the regression is a little problematic, especially with this data. It ends up dropping any of the outbreaks that had any of these factors missing, which if any of you work with surveillance data, you know that is a lot of outbreaks. So we wanted to look at it a different way. So for this analysis, we ended up doing a decision tree. So we used R, we used the R part package to look at this in a different way. So this does not drop missing, which is great for our situation. And it also it picks out only the relevant predictors as well as some cut points, which is pretty relevant to what we're interested in. So I will just walk through an arm of this tree to demonstrate. So say you have an STEC 0157H7 outbreak. Is the percentage of your cases in your outbreak that are between 20 to 49 years less than 33%? We'll go down the yes route. Then the next question would be, are cases under 5 years, the percentage of cases under 5 years, less than 10? If yes, is the season fall? If the answer is no, then the model would predict that you have a beef outbreak. If the answer is yes, then it goes on to ask, is the percentage of female cases less than 63%? So if the answer is no, meaning if it's more than 63%, the model would predict that you have a leafy vegetable or leafy greens outbreak. And if yes, then a beef outbreak, and so on. So the next question is, well, okay, so this looks nice and it's intuitive, but how well does it do? Could it actually be applied? And so if you look at the sensitivity and specificity at the bottom here, and remember we're working with three-way comparisons, so our cutoff for chance is 33%. So we're doing better than chance, which is good, and I think is a great proof of concept that this past information and looking at it together as well is really valuable, though, of course, not perfect. So just to wrap up, so pathogen and serotype are really the best predictors of a food vehicle. So I think it's an important step whenever you, as soon as you know a pathogen in an outbreak, to then start looking at past data, use the NORS food tool to see what's been associated with it in the past. And then we're also, the demographic data, age and gender, your descriptives, as well as season and some other factors, may also provide some further discrimination to help make hypotheses about vehicles. So again, this isn't saying for sure it's beef as opposed to these other things, but it does provide some additional evidence for your hypothesis. So, of course, there's some limitations. We kept this as basic as we could and made it easy on ourselves for this go-around. So we only stuck to really well-known sources of STEC illness, which is problematic, right, because we're always discovering new sources of illness. And in the future, I think we hope to continue to explore using NORS data as well as other surveillance data to develop novel tools and think about different ways to use this data that we already collect. So I want to acknowledge my co-authors at the Colorado School of Public Health as well as the NORS team at CDC. And please visit our website for lots more information about the COEs and other resources. Thank you.